The Secrets of Star Wars is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
Hi, this is Vanessa Marshall. I play Hera Syndulla on Star Wars Rebels, and you're listening to the Secrets of Star Wars podcast. May the Force be with you always.
Hello there.
It's a power that Jedi have that lets them control people and make things float.
Impressive. Every word in that sense was wrong.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
It's against my programming to impersonate a deity.
That's not how the Force works.
Force is with me, and I am with the Force, and I fear nothing.
Remember, the Force will be with you, always.
Hi, I'm Robert King, and you're listening to The Secrets of Star Wars, where we look at the deeper meanings and themes found in the stories and characters in that galaxy far, far away. This week, we're talking about Juggernaut. That's episode 12 of season 3 of The Bad Batch. Joining me on the panel are Ryan Nafziger. Hi,
hello.
Ryan.
Hi.
Yeah. And Thomas Salerno. Good to have you back, Thomas.
Thanks, Robert.
So Juggernaut is episode 12 out of 15 total. So you just know by that number that everything is going to go wrong for our heroes. Sure enough, Omega is taken back to Tantus, where she's immediately slotted into the same testing procedure as before. And if she gets any more information about why she's there, it's only because she's being thrown into the vault herself, along with the other child prisoners. Meanwhile, Crosshair reveals one last possibility for finding their way to Tantus. Our old friend, former Vice Admiral, and now prisoner of the Empire, Edmund Rampart. The problem? Yeah, he's a prisoner of the Empire now. So the Batch, with some help from Fee, have to break him out of an Imperial work camp. This involves hijacking the massive tank/transport that gives the episode its title. Once he's free, he reveals that nobody knows the coordinates of Tantus. It was designed that way. But he can get around that. And we'll have to wait for the next episode to find out just what that means. So, lot to talk about in this episode. But before we get there, there's also
I forgot his first name was Edmund. That's kind of funny.
I got to give credit to Wikipedia for that.
Very good.
I did not know. I'm not sure it was actually mentioned on the show, but
I was trying to figure out who he was. It's been a while since we've seen him, so I was like, wait, who is this guy? When I was watching the first episode.
Yeah, well, last time we saw him, it was like, arrest Admiral Rampart, and he's being dragged away. And so, like,
yes. It was like the very beginning of season 2, I think. Yeah. So, so yeah, it's been a while since we've seen this good friend of the Batch. But before we get into the episode, I just want to talk a little bit about some news that's come up, at least since the last time I've been on the podcast. We have some new shows that are coming out really quickly. We have, sort of in the same vein as Tales of the Jedi, we have Tales of the Empire dropping on Star Wars Day on May 4th. That was a completely out of the blue surprise to me. Did either of you have any idea it was coming?
Complete surprise. And I'm the first thing I thought of was that meme with Palpatine. A surprise, to be sure, but a welcome one.
Yes.
Indeed.
Yeah. I love Tales of the Jedi, so I'm all for it. I'm actually going to see the Eugene Symphony forming the backing of Star Wars A New Hope on May 4th this year. Oh, so I will not be able to watch Tales of the Empire as it comes out, because I will be watching A New Hope with a live orchestra performing all of the music in real time. So I am excited for May the 4th, and now I have another reason to be excited for May the 4th in one of my favorite mini series coming back. Now, if we can get a Vision season 3, please, Yes.
Oh,
that is the only way that we can get May the 4th to be better. So if we could just announce that on May the 4th, thank you. This was my idea, and I am an insider at Disney. That is not true.
Well, way to show the rest of us that we're not real Star Wars fans. Thanks, Ryan. Oh, man, that would be awesome. That's almost worth a trip down to Eugene just to see. Anyway, yeah, so I'm a big Barriss fan. I would love to see, I'm really looking forward to seeing more of her story. And yeah, I loved Tales of the Jedi. So Tales of the Empire is right up my alley. Yeah, really excited about that. I am cautiously optimistic about the next show dropping, The Acolyte, which has a release date, June 4th, and has that really cool trailer. Like any new property, and especially a new story in an environment we haven't explored a whole lot, cautiously optimistic. It what I'm seeing looks really cool, but you never know. So what are your thoughts on The Acolyte?
Well, I mean, for me, the whole High Republic initiative has been rather mixed. I liked the idea of the High Republic. In execution, it has not been clicking with me, except for a few isolated books and comics here and there.
Okay.
But I am cautiously optimistic about the show. I'm willing to give it a try, yeah.
I hate to be a bucket of cold water, but like, I hope that The Acolyte can present us with like compelling characters, because like so far from the trailer, I was like, this is interesting, but like it felt a bit generic. Like, I really hope that we can get some good, like, central characters out of The Acolyte show, or else it's going to be kind of hard. Cause like the one thing that I've always found that I love in Star Wars is primarily the characters. Everyone seems to have so much personality that sometimes it just becomes a personality overload. But like,
well, it's the dynamic between the characters,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you've got these between the characters, yeah.
High energy characters who are bouncing off each other, and it makes amazing sparks, you know?
So. Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. So like, hopefully they can, I mean, like, you can't just automatically create in one trailer, you know, especially when it's divorced from any other like existing Star Wars, like, I guess, storyline, as Acolyte kind of is at this point. You can't just automatically create interesting characters. That's not possible in a, you know, 2 minute long trailer. So maybe I'm just being unduly cold, but hopefully it's cool. I am cautiously optimistic if they can make a good story and a good world out of it. Yeah.
So you're doubling my cautiously optimistic with
yes,
your cautiously optimistic.
I'm all cautiously right. Times two optimistic. Yes. Very good.
Oh, and right Robert, on. While we were talking, I just remembered another announcement that on May 3rd, they're going to be doing re-release screenings of The Phantom Menace again.
Yes.
Again. Which I am desperately trying to find tickets for that. There are not tickets yet on sale in my area. Although they say, pre-release tickets, you can get them. And I'm like, not where I live, apparently. So, but yeah, they say screenings will start on May 3rd and that tickets are on sale now. That was the one prequel I missed in theaters, so I would really love the chance to see it now that it's back.
Is going to be the George Lucas's special edition of The Phantom Menace with extra Jar Jar scenes, right?
Yeah.
Oh boy.
I was not yet 6 months of this world when Phantom Menace was released, so I did not catch that in theaters.
No, yeah, I had to be like 10, and like, but I assume that they will be putting up the version that's on Disney Plus, which has a couple of weird like things about it, but yeah. But it's actually my, and this will be a controversial opinion, it's actually my favorite of the prequels. So I am actually excited to, it's the one that I rewatch the most.
Okay.
So I am interested to see it on the big screen.
I mean, it's my second favorite of the prequels. So, you know.
When I was a kid, episode 2 was my favorite. My favorite Star Wars movie was episode 2 when I was a kid. That's not my opinion now, but I liked The Phantom Menace a lot because it has one of the greatest scenes in all of Star Wars history, which is the pod racing scene. And it is epic. And it is my nickname. Defining
the scene. Pod racer.
Yeah, the pod racer. The only pod racer. The only one who survived.
I mean, and yeah, and that you know, the N64 game came out of that.
Episode 1 Racer, the video game that defined my experience of video games.
I do have nostalgic memories of playing that game at my friend's house. Yeah.
I've still played it. My N64 still works.
Ooh.
Anyways, Bad Batch.
Well, before we get to Bad Batch, there is another announcement with an actual date attached to it, and that is Grogu and the Mandalorian. They may try to tell you that it's the Mandalorian and Grogu, but we all know that it's Grogu and the Mandalorian. And they say that's going to come out on May 22nd, 2026. That's a little over 2 years away from now. So I'm going to put on my predictor's cap here, even though I'm always wrong when I predict things, but I'm going to predict that date will change.
I think you could safely bet money on that. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Not much to say there. I agree.
I'm really looking forward to sort of the culmination of the Filoniverse, but I'm not sure I would have chosen a movie about Mandalorian and Grogu to do it. But I don't know. We will see. Do you have any thoughts?
First time Star Wars is putting out a movie in a while.
Yeah. Mm.
So that'll be interesting.
I mean, here's hoping.
I think the true culmination, though, of the live action Filoniverse will be with the Thrawn movie when it comes out. If they keep to that idea.
Do you think there's going to be because Mandalorian and Grogu is a Filoni movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you think Filoni's going to get two movies, Mando and Thrawn?
I don't think so.
Because, I thought that they had basically said that was the plan, that they were kind of building to a crossover movie, essentially, where they were going to cross over the Mando story thread with the Ahsoka story thread and kind of end that Thrawn, storyline. Unless they've changed it, I don't know.
Yeah, I think I'm assuming that The Mandalorian Grogu is going to be that movie.
Okay. I think that's what I was assuming too.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. As much as I would have loved to see another season of The Mandalorian, I think that's where they're going to go with it. But again, I am known for my predictions being wrong.
I only make correct predictions.
Well,
no one who listens to this podcast will ever believe this. And they are right.
We should like count up the number of lies we have told on this podcast the last 10 minutes.
I'm going to get reverse canonized if that happens.
Yeah.
it can't be any worse than re-listening to us on the Secrets of Middle Earth and counting up all the times we were catastrophically wrong about things that were going to happen in the Rings of Power.
Oh, yeah. Well, not to rabbit trail too much, but that show was all over the map in terms of its lore and connection to Tolkien's actual writing. So
hindsight, what was going to happen is telegraphed in the first episode, and we totally missed it. So
fair enough.
But it is in hindsight. But anyway.
Yeah,
I wonder if rewatching The Bad Batch again, like once the finale is out, we'll be like, oh, yeah, we should have seen that coming.
Yeah,
I'm hoping so. I mean, I'm hoping they were planting the seeds early on.
Mm-hmm.
But way to bring us back. Thanks, Thomas.
Yeah, well done.
My pleasure.
So let's talk about this and I don't know. Maybe let's just start with where the last episode left off and where this one begins, and that's with Omega's sacrifice. I mean, she is definitely one of those. I want to look back at the end of the series and see, oh, okay, this is what they've been doing with her all along.
Yeah.
Because she's clearly been a mysterious character all along.
Mm-hmm.
But end of last episode, she gave herself up, saved Pabu. And, you know, I don't know, again, not to get too much into the last episode, but that kind of contrast between the mountain of Pabu and the mountain of Tantith was like really strong for me in that last episode. And so Omega going from the one to the other. And on the one hand, it's like noble sacrifice. This is classic hero behavior, which is what we expect from Omega. But she's exactly where she started. And it's like, what's been gained? Yeah. What do you think of where she's at and like, I don't know, maybe even like the moral calculus of how do you decide whether such a sacrifice is worthwhile? What do you think is going on in her head and what would be going on in yours?
I feel in terms of Omega, one, she wanted to rescue the people of Pabu. She didn't want them to suffer because they were after her. And I think second, like what she says to Crosshair towards the end of last episode was that, think of the bigger mission. I'm just a part of it. Her whole mm-hmm. thing since she's escaped is trying to get back and rescue the other clone prisoners. That's been kind of her objective, her fantasy of getting back and not leaving any of her brothers behind. So I feel like that's that kind of informed her decision, I think.
Well, that's a mission she picked up from Hunter. And really, but from the Bad Batch in general, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Omega was always getting back to Tantus. It's just kind of this is an interesting way of showing that. I was expecting them to have a big Storm the Castle moment, you know, with everyone all together, like committed to, you know, breaking all of the imprisoned clones, you know, out of Tantus, along with anyone else they could find, pretty much. That was what I was totally expecting them to go for. But like, you know, bringing Omega back, captured again for, you know, the fourth time. She's so good at escaping at this point. It's just second nature to her. It's like she gets captured every other day, you know.
She's in her new home now. This is your new home. And so, yeah.
I actually really wonder. I think one thing they've been doing really good at in this episode is making it clear just how secure the vault is. Mm-hmm. Because every single time they show the vault, they show like in detail that there's one way in and one way out, and that it's guarded by clones and it's guarded by lasers, and there's mm-hmm. no way to get out of it unless you go the one way in and the one way out. And I think that's actually really good visual like priming up for us, because it's like Omega is gonna have to leave by someone else's like actions, you know, like she can't get out of this one, I think is the point that they've been trying to make with the whole, you know, lasers in front of the door, you know, the army, the small army guarding it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like someone has to save Omega at this point. But who's it going to be? Is it going to be Emery? Is it going to be Batch? It's going to be, I don't know, Rex? Is it going to be Cody? Who knows?
I think we will eventually see that everyone is here kind of storm the castle moment by the end. Yeah.
We have to. Wolf, too. Like, what happened to Wolf? We need to see where his story, like, we see the intersection with Rex, but, like, they kind of have to show him at some point, you know, what happens to him. And Cody, of course. Like, those are the three.
Yep.
I mean, I guess those are the two main people, like, everyone's been talking about this entire, like, as the Bad Batch has been running. It's like, oh, boy. How does Wolf get to be with Rex? Oh, boy. What happens to Cody? We never see him again after the end of Clone Wars. It's like, you know, there's these other questions.
And we saw him for a couple of episodes with Crosshair.
Yes. Yes.
Cody. And then he just vanishes.
Yes.
And he doesn't turn up with Rex's crew.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, where is he? You know, I think those are some of the, those unanswered questions and loose threads like Wolf and Cody they're going to definitely have to tie those up by the end.
I got three episodes left to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, assuming that this is the end of the sort of animated Clone Wars thread of things. One of the things I'm noticing is that Star Wars as a franchise is really good at integrating what's introduced in one show into the other shows in the universe and sort of carrying things over. So I'm not sure I expect them to tie up all those threads in the Bad Batch. You know, they want to keep telling stories.
And yeah.
Loose threads are a great way to introduce a new story. But back to Omega. I really loved the way... So, you know, Nala Se told Emery, you know, you do have the power to make choices.
Mm-hmm.
And now Emery is... Omega is telling Emery the same thing. It's like, you have a choice. And Emery is very clear, I don't have a choice here. And I'm just thinking of the passage from, I think, First John, where it's, you know, love casts out all fear, and there's no fear in love, but love casts out all fear. And I'm just like feeling the fear of the Empire just dripping off of Emery, and yet it's struggling with this genuine concern she has for Omega.
It actually, and this just came to me, it actually reminds me a lot of Galen Erso. Because when he said, I knew that if I refused to do this, they would go ahead and do it with somebody else. And that's why he chose to stay, work on the Death Star, but also sabotage it from the inside. So he found that middle way where it's like he didn't have a choice in the sense he needed to work on the Death Star program or they would just do it without him. But he did have a choice in what he did inside of that. You know, he did. There were some things under his control that he could do inside the system. And I think Emery hasn't found that. She's struggling to find that place.
Yeah, Nala Se was very much in that mode of, you know, showing up at work, but sabotaging from the inside. Emery doesn't seem to be there yet.
I think part of it is because Emery's a clone, right? So she knows, she has a very visceral reminder of, like, how compartmentalized she is, you know?
As in, like... She is not really her own person. She's been made for a purpose, kind of thing.
There's also other female clones on Tantus that look similar to her as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just a very, like, in a similar way that, like, all of the clones have kind of had to decide whether or not they're going to serve the Empire or not. It's like, she's just kind of having to, it's like a microcosm that she has to now, like, deal with. It's like, yeah, I know there's a million me's out there, you know, just hyperbolic. There's a million me's out there that the Empire can just slot in and do the same thing. So might as well be me, because at least I can, you know, do something, and that's the something that Emery has to figure out. You know, it's like she can do something. She just doesn't know what it's going to be, and she's afraid to figure it out.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But that you're not really a person. You're just a cog in the machine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, that goes all the way back to George Lucas's THX. You know, been a part of his, you know, and he has passed on to people like Dave Filoni. That's a theme that Star Wars has been dealing with from the very beginning, you know, that the dehumanization of people by this faceless, you know, machine state.
Yeah. And
have either of you seen the movie The Great Dictator with Charlie Chaplin?
No,
not the whole thing.
He's Hitler. Clips. If you see anything from it, see the speech at the end where he talks about, you know, these totalitarian states making machine men, he calls them, with machine minds and machine hearts.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, but you are not machines. You are men. It's a very powerful speech. And I feel like that is kind of the theme that, you know, like what Ben Kenobi says, you know, Vader's more machine than man, but he finds that inner man by the end of Return of the Jedi, you know, so that, but even people who aren't like literally part machine, you know, are being turned into machines by the Empire because they're being given machine minds where they just do what the Empire orders and machine hearts because their hearts are being hardened to, you know, the horrific stuff that's being done. They're being desensitized
to the horrific stuff that they themselves are being made to do.
One thing that just came to mind when you said that, Thomas, was how this final season has really shown the difference between clones as passive accessories to the Empire, and clones who are like actively, you know, moving on with the Empire in the form of their helmets. Have you noticed that all of the clones that have been, you know, good just basically don't use their helmets unless they're fighting? They take them off. And the clones that are just fully in with the Empire are the what are they called? Not shock troopers. What are their names?
The commandos.
The commando clones. Like the commando clones never take their helmets off. And all of the clones, like you can tell when a clone is considering like leaving, because they'll pretty much always take the helmet off and start talking to another clone face to face. I find that to be a fascinating like visual element to like see kind of the way that the clones like process their when we see them making the decision whether or not they're going to be Imperial or not. It's like, are you going to keep your helmet on, and are you going to just be an accessory to everything, and are you going to just become a body? Are you just going to become a number, or are you going to actually take the helmet off? Are you going to have a name? Are you going to have
a face?
Yeah. Are you going to have a name? Are you going to have a face? Are you going to acknowledge that you have a face instead of just hiding behind a mask, which is a big theme in Star Wars? This hiding behind masks is a big piece of the puzzle.
So I hadn't noticed that, and that's a great insight. I did notice in this episode, Crosshair never takes his helmet off. Once he puts it on, he's it might be a mission thing for him.
Yeah.
When he's on the mission, he keeps his helmet on. But Hunter and Wrecker had their helmets off when they were interrogating Rampart, and Crosshair very much had his helmet on. He was using that sort of distorted voice that comes through the helmet. What do you think was going on with that? Do you think this is a struggle, part of Crosshair's struggle, his identity struggle?
Well, I think he definitely used his helmet that false anonymity in his I'd have to you're bringing up such a good point that it makes me want to rewatch a lot of season two, where we see Crosshair's like redemption really begin. Cause like, I think he probably does. I mean, like the first scene when we see Crosshair like make his choice, he doesn't put his helmet on. He already's got it on and his armor mm-hmm. changes. And he is like, you never see him. You never see him take it off when he's fighting. I don't think after that point, unless he's like being confronted with the reality and then he's sort of like forced to take it off. You know, speaking right. to, oh gosh, what's his name? The last clone on, that terrible winter planet that they the outpost. Had to go back to.
Yeah.
Last clone on the outpost. He basically has his helmet off for that entire like episode when he makes his decision to kill the guy. So I think
and I
that
think
there's
he had his helmet off too when he was talking to Cody before Cody left.
Yes,
and Cody
and
was all disillusioned
too.
Yeah.
And then just as sort of another example of this, Wolf, when he sees Rex, immediately takes his helmet off. And that was what I also wanted to say. And so that's where I really think that like take the helmets are a sign in Batch so far. It's really been a way to see when the clones are being confronted with the reality and when and what they're sort of like having to deal with. Anyways.
Yeah.
I'm sure if I watch it back, Crosshair is going to have his helmet on unless he's like actually talking to someone who is challenging him in some way.
And challenging him at his core level, at his human level.
Yeah. Not just like in a battle when he gets his helmet knocked off. That's not what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You know?
No. And Thomas, you're absolutely right. I mean, like the mask of Darth Vader from the very beginning has been this theme moving forward. The mask is where evil hides.
Kylo Ren too.
Oh yeah, you know, we can do a whole episode on that.
Yeah.
Masks in Star Wars episode when?
yeah, we need to make a note of that. Yeah.
Well, speaking of Crosshair, I mean, okay. Well, there's the whole sort of breakout sequence that you know, that's the whole sort of plot of the episode, is breaking out Rampart. I don't know why I keep blanking on his name. Rampart, breaking
Rampart
him out
first name.
Yeah, well, I had it written in front of me. It's my secret. How do I know what to say? They've written it out for me in a script.
Gosh.
So when they're break, that's just a fun sequence, the whole part of it. But
I honestly would like more episodes like this, because it kind of gave me like that the sort of A-team in Star Wars as like what the Bad Batch is, you know, and like just having this essentially episode long action sequence was a nice change of pace. And I can see why, you know, they wouldn't want to do episodes like that all the time, but I happen to think that they're a lot of fun. And yeah, I liked, I don't know, I just thought that there was a lot of cool action set pieces in this, and a lot of cool you know, setup for, you know, as when they were wrecking that planet initially, and you see the bridge. And I'm like, I spotted those tank traps on the bridge, and I'm like, oh boy, I'm like, that's going to be an obstacle later. You know?
Yep. Yep. A lot of good setup.
Mm-hmm. And Fee's like, terminal velocity, you know, fall from orbit stealth entry.
I thought you would have recognized a stealth approach when you saw one.
They go into freefall too, because you see Hunter and Crosshair kind of lift off the deck plates, and like
the helmet was in the air, like floating. Mm-hmm. Hunter's helmet was floating in the air. Yeah.
So she must have turned the artificial gravity off.
But I think she turned all of the power off on the ship. Yeah, that was part of it too. They're like, oh,
they just dropped like a rock.
Yeah, they're like, oh, it's just a rock. Yeah.
Oh man, Yeah, Fee is the coolest.
She's really cool.
And her ship has pedals like a car. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
That was cool. She was like pumping the brakes and stuff. I'm like, that was interesting.
Well, I think aircraft also have pedals for steering. But I love those details. I have to admit, I really, really want to see Fee and Fennec Shand in a team up Buddy Crook series.
Ooh,
I think that would be amazing.
I want a Scum and Villainy series. I want a Scum and Villainy series that basically covers, like, in three episode miniseries, like, particular persons in the underbelly of the Republic and the Empire and everything. That's what I want.
You could take the name from that one Timothy Zahn novel, Scoundrels.
You could do that, yeah?
Yeah, and just call it Scoundrels. That would be really cool.
Yeah, so much that's cool. I mean, Fee's entrance at the beginning, where the trapdoor opens and everyone's turns around and has their guns. It's like, do not shoot.
That was good.
And Fee's like, yeah, I agree with that. Don't shoot.
That was good.
Just completely chill.
It was like 3PO vibes there with the Jawas. Yo, don't shoot. Don't shoot.
Yes. I love this episode because it felt like I was playing a game of Star Wars Legion, which is a tabletop war game in the same vein of Warhammer 40K, where it's Star Wars minis instead of random Warhammer minis. And I just started playing it this week, and I was like, oh my gosh, is that a mini? Do I need to go and buy that? Is the Turbo Tank a mini? If so, I need it.
The Juggernaut as a mini would be pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
I've
got a couple minis, but, you know, I just started playing the game recently, and oh boy, it scratches an itch. I've designed an Ahsoka squad of Stormtroopers already.
Ooh.
But to the point, like, the barriers made it look like this is just an action set piece on a table. Mm-hmm. I was like, those barriers are getting knocked over in 3 seconds. Like, this is going to be just an epic crash through scene. And I'm just so here for it. I was ready for this particular scene from the trailer because I was like, if the Batch is in a tank and they're going full bore assault mode, I have to see this.
Yeah, I remember that from the trailer. I was like, ooh, that looks like fun.
Yeah.
And the episode was also a kind of a callback to the very beginning of Rogue One, where Jyn Erso is on that other prison planet and they're using the Juggernauts as prison transports.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep.
And they took something from Legends. I remember when I was a kid, I had the old Essential Guide to Vehicles and Vessels, and the Juggernaut was in there. And they said that it was a holdover from the Clone Wars, but in the Imperial period, the Juggernauts were being phased out because they were notoriously unreliable. They would constantly break down. And they actually showed that in this. When Rampart and the aliens are working in like the bowels of the thing, and that thing breaks and the steam goes everywhere, and
I love the dynamic. I mean, it was like almost a throwaway part of the episode, but I love the dynamic between Rampart and the Ugnaught that he teamed up with.
I don't speak. Whatever it is.
Yes. That was very good. That was a callback to like original trilogy dynamics.
Humans were very rude to the aliens.
And just the like, I don't speak whatever it is you're speaking. We don't need to make up a name for it, just whatever the crap the aliens speaking, you know.
the absolute imperial disdain.
Yes.
It kind of reminded me too of like Luke in the cantina with the Aqualish, who's just like, you know, going like, and Luke's just like,
yes,
I can't understand you. Mm-hmm. He doesn't like you, you know?
Yeah. Oh, man. It does. You know, the more we talk about it, the more it's like, yeah, they are really getting that old Star Wars vibe and feel into these episodes. Mm-hmm. And it's great because I remember one of the things that bugged me about the prequel trilogy is that they didn't have the feel of the original trilogy. And that was very deliberate on Lucas's part. And, you know, now seeing the larger context, it's like, okay, I see what he was going for. Not sure he succeeded entirely, but I see what he was going for and I respect that. But I very much like that feel of, you know, witty adventure in a broken down universe that's coming through in this episode in particular, but I mean, that I think has been kind of building in the Bad Batch all along. Mm-hmm. And yeah,
and that's why I love Book of Boba Fett.
I also like that show. I like that show a lot.
Oh, I'm derailing this so hard. I'm sorry.
I mean, this is. I did not get that feeling from Book of Boba Fett.
Oh, that's and funny.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't want to yuck your yum. I don't want to say, you know, your experience is invalid, even though it is. No. No, but I just had a completely different experience of Book of Boba Fett, and it just felt completely off to me, which is like, okay, you know, not I am not the audience for this show.
That's the thing, like
yeah.
I am very much the audience for the Bad Batch, though. When this, like, yes, show came out, or when the arc of the Clone Wars with them came out, it was like, I didn't know I wanted this, you know. It's like, but why? You know, once I have it, I'm like, oh yeah, this is great. Just following rogue clones around on cool missions. And, you know, and I liked too how you actually saw, and somebody pointed this out on our Discord, the stormtroopers actually did some competent military maneuvers in this episode.
Yes.
They managed to do a successful airdrop onto the Juggernaut. Was that you?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Because I was like, I was trying to figure out who that was. And like, I knew it was you then, but in the several days of, like, since then, I forgot it was you. But yeah, we were talking about that. How, because yeah, at first I was like, well, why do they have stormtroopers guarding this prison planet? But then, like, yeah, they did manage to almost secure the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
It's, yeah.
And then guy gets crushed on the rock, though. That was pretty intense.
They were good about showing that he wasn't completely smushed. He was just knocked off.
I don't know how.
It was a murder day for the Batch. They were not using stun. So, mm-hmm, you know, sometimes it's a murder day, sometimes it's not a murder day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Crosshair, Plan 55. It's magnetically sealed.
Just
like let's use Plan 55.
I think Crosshair's getting his mojo sealed, back. You know, like from A New Hope.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Crosshair's getting his mojo back. I mean, yes. he made the shot using the magnetically sealed aspect to ricochet his blaster bolt round.
Mm-hmm.
He still has that tremor in his hand, but it only seems to show up when people mention Tantus, which I think is significant.
And I think it's getting to be less of an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not gone, but he's making shots that I think he would have missed earlier in the season.
I like that Wrecker almost forgets what the plan is.
Yes, it's been like,
Oh, yeah. Plan 55, waiting on you. You know, like, that was great. I love the witty dialogue and the banter. Batch banter. Batch banter. Batch banter. Yeah.
Yeah. No, the Batch is... I am glad because it feels like they are bringing the season and the series to a strong conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
But I will be sad when this show is gone because it has been one of my favorite Star Wars shows for a while.
That's been really good.
There's been a lot of good. I mean, the critics are out there all over the place, but I mean, I have found pretty much everything except the Book of Boba Fett something I really enjoyed. You know, none of the shows are perfect, but there was a lot to enjoy in all of them. And the Book of Boba Fett, hey, it's something that you guys enjoy, and I've got other friends who enjoy it too. So it's like, there's a lot of good Star Wars out there mm-hmm. right now, and it's exciting to me. And I hope they can bring it back to the big screen, you know, with Mando and Grogu. I hope they can make that transition again.
Yeah, I want to see Star Wars in theaters again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think we all do.
Yeah.
Oh, that game of chicken between the two tanks, that was spectacular.
Yes. Yes.
The one, you know, and then they end up using the disabled tank as a ramp, and they mm-hmm. fly over in the air. I'm like, this is great. This is almost like, you know,
you think they used it as a ramp? It looked to me like they were just flying. Like they just flew over.
I don't know.
I thought they used it as a ramp because
it felt like a war game set piece. It was great. Yeah.
Because they knocked the front two, they locked the front axle off. And so the first two wins, so it kind of formed a little bit of a slope because the front end of the vehicle was now pitched down mm-hmm. on the tarmac. So I feel like that was the vibe I got, that they'd used it as a ramp. But, you know, I don't know, maybe they figured out that maybe it has like thrusters on it somewhere, like the Batmobile, from the Nolan movies. Yeah. From the Nolan movies.
Yeah, where it can just like, do like those jumps. Knight Rider.
Yeah. Oh, like Knight Rider. Oh, wow. I heard the word Knight Rider in a while. Okay. That's a whole, gosh, secrets of movies and TV shows. Knight Rider.
Knight
go
Rider.
Now.
Okay.
When
okay.
is it?
It's the next time it comes out. Yeah.
What?
It's you know, when the Knight Rider episode comes out, that's when it comes out. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, boy.
Okay. What I'm trying to say is it may or may not come out.
This is incoherent rambling.
Okay. Oh, man. It's getting late in the season. Yeah. We're all mm-hmm. a little bit punchy.
Oh, one thing that I thought was odd was then, and only odd because I wondered why the Batch was surprised by this, when they get Rampart and, well, first of all, I like that he recognizes Crosshair, and Crosshair's like, you remember me, how touching.
Yes.
But then, you know, he says, you know, I won't tell you anything unless you get me off this planet. And I'm like, oh, of course. I'm like, that just seemed so obvious. I'm like, why are you guys surprised? Of course, I thought you were getting him off the planet anyway. Because you can't leave him there, because then they'll just interrogate him and find out what he told you. So you've got to take him with you. So I just don't know why they were surprised by that.
There was also like a weird inconsistency that the Imperials noticed that the comms were being jammed.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I was thinking, oh, the Batch is jamming the comms. But then later, they're trying to contact Fee, and they're surprised that the comms are being jammed. And I'm thinking, who's jamming the comms on this tank?
It's just a piece of crap, that's why.
Yeah, oh, so it's not being jammed, it's just
down.
A malfunction.
Yeah, it's a bad tank. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
if my old vehicle spec book was anything to go by, it was probably a problem in the Juggernaut.
that's actually really funny. The Juggernauts were the Soviet Ladas of the Republic,
right? Or the
Hugos,
the German Pintos. Panther.
I don't know.
The Ford Pintos. Or I don't think weren't that bad.
The German Panther tank, where it was like,
oh, the
so over-engineered that it would always break down. Like,
yes.
Good tank, but very high maintenance.
Very good. Yes.
But yeah, and they finally get him off the planet, and he's like, oh yeah, I don't directly know where Tantus is, but I know how we can find out. And I'm like, there's always something, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, we've got three more episodes. Mm-hmm.
So I assume next episode is them going to be finding out with Rampart how to get the coordinates.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then probably the beginning of the big attack, and then the conclusion of the big attack.
Mm-hmm.
And
they also needed to show us why Crosshair just didn't do this four episodes earlier when they're trying to find Tantus. Like, he obviously knows Rampart's here, and like, there has to have been a reason why he didn't just think, oh, we can go and get Rampart off of this Imperial labor camp. Like, this is probably Crosshair's last ditch possible effort to figure out where Tantus is. And they were trying to figure it out before without, without going this, you know, sort of last ditch effort. Because the first thing I thought was
he
like,
he says so.
Yeah. Exactly. And he says that Rampart can't exactly be trusted.
Yeah. So it's like they kind of had to show us in an interesting way why they didn't do this four episodes earlier and just risk it, you know.
Well, but also something Crosshair said, he admitted explicitly, you know, Tantus is not a place I ever want to go back to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think that's a huge moment for Crosshair, saying that out loud. Admitting that he's afraid, admitting that he's unwilling to do this, and that he's probably been sort of dragging his heels, if not actively sabotaging the efforts to get back to Tantus. He's always been discouraging Omega from trying to get back. Mm-hmm. And now he's saying, I don't want to do this, but I see that it's the mission. It's what we need to do as a team.
Mm-hmm.
And he makes that sacrifice. I am loving Crosshair's arc, across the whole series, but especially this season, you know, how he is moving from just absolute, this is my duty, to, I am looking out for myself and I stick my neck out for no one, to I see that I am part of a team and the team has a mission and I'm willing to put others ahead of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a great, it's a great heroic or anti-heroic arc. And I've loved that about Crosshair from the very beginning of the show, and I'm so happy to be like seeing it play out.
Mm-hmm.
It's playing out really well, at least to my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I was, though, genuinely surprised to see Rampart again. Because I was like, oh, I thought they just took him out back and shot him. You know, the Imperials. I didn't realize they actually threw him in prison. I'm like, that guy knows too much. I'm like, why is he in prison? Shoot him.
I mean, from the Empire.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're like, nobody gets off this planet. They don't know the Bad Batch.
Yeah. One thing, I mean, after rewatching the latest episode, I was like, these last four or so episodes, really ever since they went back to Rex's base and the fact that they were ambushed, I think that if Tech was here, this wouldn't have happened. Like, a lot of this wouldn't have happened. Because the Batch has been ambushed a ton of times, and I'm pretty sure that Tech usually preempts these ambush attempts by, like, monitoring for this sort of thing to happen. So I am wondering, like, how, it was just something that I noticed. It's like, wow, like, Tech's loss hurt them. Like, they're not as prepared anymore. And that's pretty clear. Like, just through the whole series, really, or this past season, it's like, the Batch is not as prepared to do things anymore, and that was Tech's job, and like you feel his loss in like unexpected ways too. I mean, when Fee just mentioned him, it was like, oh gosh, yeah, that's right. But also just the fact that like they've been this dark agent, you know, the dark clone has just been destroying the Batch. Like, he can get anywhere and can do anything, and like that is the it's like the anti-tech, you know. Tech is I can get us any information we need, or at least figure out how to get that information. And now it's like this clone is like doing the opposite of that. And no, that's not me saying that the clone is tech. I really don't think that's true. I really think tech is gone, and I'm really sad. But it is interesting that they've brought on this like this clear like weakness exploiting clone that has like very obviously shown us, oh wow, we are missing a key part of this team, and it hurts, you know.
Yeah. Is this someone was mentioning earlier that Fee has been referring to Tech by his name, Tech.
Well, she called him Brown Eyes in this episode, I think.
I think this may be the first time she has this season. And again, it was to Crosshair. You know, any friend of Brown Eyes is a friend of mine.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. His loss is, it's not on the surface, but it's underneath everything that's going on.
Yeah. And I miss Echo, too. I know he's not dead, and he's with Rex, but for a while, he was kind of like the conscience of the group.
Yeah, he was the heart. Yeah.
And, you know, it's sad that we don't get more of him.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I keep expecting him to show up. Like, it's you know, I keep expecting them to say, okay, Echo, we need you. Rex, we need you. And them to team up.
Mm-hmm.
But again, maybe they're saving that for the big finale.
They've got to. Got to keep us on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're just about out of time. I would love to just keep talking about these characters in this show. This episode, I mean, like, some of the critics have said there's like not a lot happened in this episode. But I think what this episode did really well was bring out that sense of this is who the Batch are. This is what they're capable of when they get together and get focused. Yeah. How about you guys? What final thoughts or summary would you have for this episode and where we are in the series?
Just, I enjoyed myself from beginning to end. Like I said, I like having an adventure like this where, like you said, Robert, it shows what the Batch is capable of when they're, you know, acting like, you know, a well-oiled, you know, machine and just doing their thing, you know, and that they are able to essentially get out of any situation, no matter what kind of crazy odds there are, they will find a way in and out. You know, like I said, they are the A-team in Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love it for that. And I'm just really excited to see how they close this out. You know, I really am. I think that we're going to see the stakes ratchet up in perhaps some surprising ways. And I'm looking forward to that.
The Batch has always kept me on my toes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's like, how about you, Ryan?
Oh, I mean, the reason why I like Clone Wars a lot is because I really like fun action scenes. You know, that's something I really enjoy. And this episode had that, and it was great. It, like I said, it felt like I was watching a war game scenario play out. And that was really fun to see. And I think that this episode's kind of like the last low narrative episode, and the rest of them are probably going to be like, all right, guys, we're bringing everyone together. I really hope that we see what happens to Wolf. We've got to see it, you know. We've got to see Rex and Gregor and Wolf have got to get together somehow. We know that much.
True.
Yeah,
and they are going to need to call in every favor, get every contact to hit this place.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's what we're leading up to. Like we've established that Tantus is hard to get. They're going to get the coordinates somehow next episode, and then it's going to be all right. Call in everyone. Every single person the Batch has done something for everyone. We're calling it in. We're bringing it home, and it's going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh man. Well, I am there for it too. Looking forward to seeing what next week brings us. But for this week, I think that'll wrap us up. We would love to hear your thoughts about The Bad Batch and all things Star Wars. Please drop us an email at starwars@sqpn.com, or you can reach us on Facebook at StarQuest Media. Swing by our Discord server. You can access that through our website at sqpn.com/discord. You can help our community grow when you subscribe or leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. We are on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Spotify, iHeartRadio, lots of others. We have a SQPN YouTube channel. Check that out. We want to especially thank our patrons on Patreon who make it possible for us to create The Secrets of Star Wars and all the other shows on StarQuest. This episode, we'd especially like to thank Shelby R., Mary K., Audra B., Crystal J., and Ducky. Thank you for your generous support. If anyone else would like to join them in keeping our work going, please visit sqpn.com/give. So that's it for now. Until next time, Thomas, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Robert. May the Force be with you.
And with your spirit. And Ryan, it is always great to have you on. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Right on. Once again, I've been Robert King. Thank you all for listening to The Secrets of Star Wars on StarQuest.
Here's another show on the StarQuest Network you're sure to enjoy, The Secrets of Middle-Earth. Find it wherever you can find podcasts or at sqpn.com/Middle-Earth.